Welcome to It's About Florida, a weekly discussion program tackling the key issues and topics of interest to our state. I'm Tramell Gomes. Florida Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam is the point person when it comes to creating a plan for Florida's energy future. Last year, the legislature put Florida's energy office in the Department of Agriculture, and now Putnam is making the rounds to lawmakers with his recommendations to creating the state's energy portfolio. The question now is, what types of energy should be included in the mix? Our chief legislative news producer, James Call, talks with two energy advocates about what they would like to see in play for Florida.
Susan Glickman, you're with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy.
I lobby in the public's interest for moving clean energy alternatives in the state of Florida.
And Dave Micah, you're with the Florida Petroleum Council.
Director of the Florida Petroleum Council, a division of the American Petroleum Institute, representing America's oil and gas industry.
Modern life as we know it is powered by energy. And as a society, we are searching for a new source of that power. Susan, you believe it's in biofuels?
We believe that there are clean energy alternatives that include biofuels, but starts with conservation, energy efficiency, and clean renewable energies, particularly homegrown energies that we develop right here in the state of Florida. So we think we can move to a more sustainable economy that is low in carbon.
Dave Micah, would this come at your expense?
No, we don't believe so in the oil and gas industry. We actually believe that that the only place we would differ with Susan is that there aren't any silver bullets. That we need all forms of energy moving forward in this country and around the globe, because certainly we don't live in this country alone. And we're going to need the traditional fuels, the oil and natural gas and coal and nuclear fuels. But we're also going to need to move forward on these renewable fuels, such as the biofuels, alternative energy. And let me say, as an oil and gas representative, that Susan's exactly right. Conservation and efficiency are an important part of that equation as well.
In 2008, Florida passed landmark legislation, House Bill 7135, which contains numerous provisions to shift the state into a clean energy future. Susan, how have we done over the last 3 years?
Well, we still have a long way to go, and nothing is going to happen overnight. But we do have the resources in Florida to begin. The first thing is people need to understand that we send almost $50 billion out of state because all the coal and oil and gas come from other places. We spend $300 million to Columbia every year for coal. So we need to keep those energy dollars here at home so we can create jobs and a more vibrant economy right here in Florida. So we need to do a much better job. We don't have a target in Florida for energy conservation. We don't have any targets for renewable energy. So we have not really joined, you know, many other states, as many as 30 states that do have targets for renewables, in creating a market for renewable energy here in Florida.
Those target reductions that Susan mentions, Dave, what's the petroleum industry's position on that?
Well, we prefer market-driven energy development. And one of the things that you'll note, as you see in my lapel, James, your listeners obviously can't see that, but it says, vote for energy. And one of the things we in the oil and gas industry are trying to do this year, which is obviously a very important year about our nation's energy future, is to look at energy from a philosophy and from where we go in our future. And we're an energy-rich nation. We've got more oil and natural gas than anybody ever thought possible, even 20 years ago. And we believe that we can produce the lion's share of that right here in North America if given the opportunity. So that's a very critical part of this big equation, is the opportunity in North America to also get that core energy resource, which is energy in the form of oil and gas energy, which is going to be our driver, we believe, and maybe different than Susan, for the foreseeable future.
Yeah, I've lived in Florida for more than 25 years now, and I was surprised to find out over the weekend that we drill for oil in Florida.
Absolutely.
We have working oil fields in the state of Florida. The Big Cypress field down in Collier County near the Everglades contains maybe 40 million barrels of oil. There's a well near Jay.
Absolutely. Jay Field was the largest discovery of oil onshore in the United States, and we continue to produce. And if you equated that with a rational dollar number, we've produced about $50 billion worth of oil in our country, in the state of Florida. Most Floridians are unaware of that. And we've done it in a pretty significant, sensitive environmental way in areas that some would term, an old cracker would term that Big Cypress area, the Everglades. And sometimes the vernacular on that gets heated in discussions on that. But we need to produce more right here in Florida as well, and we're going to be trying to do more of that.
Now, you've advised Senate President Mike Haradopoulos that we have enough oil in the United States to last for 30 years?
We believe so. We think that not just last, but we believe that in the next 20 years in North America, including us in Canada, if we were allowed access to those resources of oil and gas, that we could produce more than 90% of America's needs without importing a single barrel from anywhere else in the world. Now, that includes also the increased development of alternative fuels, which Susan certainly would favor.
Susan, would you like to join the conversation?
Yeah, I just think that what Mike has just said is pretty scary, that we only have 30 years of oil. And then what is the wisdom of using up sort of every last drop of oil that we had in the event that we needed it? That's more reason than ever why we need to move this transition. Electric car is hundreds of times more efficient than a traditional gas-fueled vehicle, and we can put, you know, a solar panel on the top of our house, and very easily most people will charge their vehicles in their home, in their garage, and it's much less expensive and much clean. There's so many reasons that we need to move away from oil, not the least of which is, as you said, there's a limited supply. Everyone knows that. That's a fact, whether it's 30 years or some number beyond that. And of course, the way we get oil, so much of our oil from the Middle East, from people who obviously are hostile to us, but we don't even need to do that because there's other reasons. The air pollution that comes from burning fossil fuels, not just oil, but coal. You know, coal puts out mercury pollution, which is a potent neurotoxin. You know, we have very, very high amounts of things like autism and asthma and other chronic illness from the pollution put out. And then there's the issue of climate change. The International Energy Agency that advises the 28th wealthiest nations just put out their 2011 Energy Outlook. In their history, they have never, ever weighed in on the issue of climate change. But because we are at such a crossroads as to where we're headed there, they said that we have 5 years to really significantly move to low carbon energy sources, or we are committed to, and I've worked around the issues of climate and energy for 10 years, and I had never heard, especially someone with such authority as the International Energy Agency, that we're on a trajectory to a 10.8 degree climate change. Now, and that may be 100 years down the road, but, you know, we're starting to see that now. So, you know, in the debate around climate change, the goal was to avoid a 2-degree rise in climate change. And now you have the International Energy Agency talking about an almost 11-degree rise in temperature. So there are so many reasons, not the least of which is keeping energy dollars right here at home. And I did have to come back at something that David said earlier about a market-driven energy production. You know, we have that conversation about the market, but we really don't have fair markets because there's been enormous amount of subsidies, you know, 10 and 20 times more subsidies for traditional fossil fuels, including oil.
We don't agree with that at all, Susan.
Well, that's a fact.
No,
that's just an amount of money that we're talking about.
Actually, if you look at the size of the sector and you look at the kind of tax system that we have, those are driven, those numbers that you're talking about, driven by the size of the oil and gas industry, taking advantage of the same kind of tax provisions that other manufacturers across our country have, the same ones. All we ask for in the industry is to have the same treatment as biofuels or anybody else. Actually, nothing like biofuels. But we all we want is the same kinds of manufacturing incentives that other manufacturers have.
Well, okay. Now, you were mentioning a low carbon energy. Mm-hmm. And we're talking about renewable fuels, renewable energy.
We're talking about meeting our energy need. And the first place we need to meet our energy need with is with energy efficiency. And we haven't done a very good job. And now I'm going to switch to the electric sector. 17 states around the country get a percentage or a percentage and a half of savings every year, year in, year out. Florida's at 0.25. So when investor-owned utilities in Florida sit down to set their conservation goals, the first thing they do is they take everything off the table that is gets a two-year payback or less. So they take away the low-hanging fruit. And they do this because, like the oil industry, the investor-owned utilities have enormous clout in the process, in the legislative process, and we don't have the policies in place. Back to the ethanol issue, things like blender pumps. We need consumer choice. So we need to put our advantages and incentives.
Okay, but I want to talk about the low-carbon energy. So is biofuels low carbon?
Biofuels is low carbon, I mean, as compared to petroleum, absolutely.
But with the problems with asthma and the pollution from burning plants?
It is much cleaner to burn a biofuel, let's say like sweet sorghum, than it is to burn oil. There's no question about that. You don't have the health problems that you do with oil.
The life cycle effects of carbon and how it's built up, it gets very technical, and we wouldn't necessarily agree with those kinds of things. One thing we would agree on is that natural gas is a much lower carbon, cleaner burning fuel than traditional coal is. And one of the things that we also know is a fact is that here in Florida, we've grown in our use of natural gas in a very significant way to now every day we're almost making half of our electricity here in Florida from natural gas. Another thing that we know is a fact is that the reserves of natural gas right here in the United States of America are tremendous. Hundreds of years of supply. We don't have access to all of them, but with new improvements in technology, we are moving forward onshore to do that. Another thing we know is that we need additional access to those supplies offshore. Areas like the Destin Dome, just 30 miles south of our own coast, where natural gas has been discovered enough to supply a city of Tallahassee for 140 years. In one little area of the Gulf of Mexico. And we know that opposition from extreme environmentalists have stopped the production of that. It's tough.
See, renewable energy is almost like a generic term. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's
it
almost
is a generic
okay?
term, sure.
Because, like, on the one hand, you have water and wind and solar, which is clean. I mean, there's no pollution.
Right.
No, we don't agree with that. Yeah, James, when you have – if you look at water, you have great concerns about the production of hydroelectric power from an environmental standpoint. If you look at wind, environmental communities have stopped many, many projects associated with wind, including some right here in Florida. If you look at solar, you have land use considerations that are very significant. So it's a measured amount of challenges associated with each form of energy. If you look at biofuels and you look at corn-based ethanol, the food versus fuel challenges associated with that. You look at tariffs and the life cycle cost of some of the carbon associated with things produced in other parts of the world and then having to be moved here versus the domestic production of that. There's challenges associated with every kind of energy, and there are actually haters, if you will, of every kind, especially given NIMBY or not in my backyard type of concerns. So calling one clean and another dirty is something that is not there. That's back to my opening statement, is that there's not silver bullets associated with energy in our mind. It's going to take that whole mix, including nuclear. Nuclear supplies this country with a great deal of resources. And going forward, Florida in particular is going to need to be a partner in the nuclear industry. And we're going to need to see those kinds of plants that are proposed brought to fruition. Now, they're long-term. They take a long time to get completed, but that's got to be part of the mix as well.
Go ahead.
Well, what David is suggesting, let's talk about nuclear for a minute. In 2006, the Florida legislature passed a law that allows the investor-owned utilities, Progress Energy and Florida Power and Light, which have nuclear proposals on the table, to charge people in advance for those nuclear power plants that may or may not get built. And they'll be spending that money along the way so people don't get that money refunded. That's why I think it was a little it's ironic when people talk about market-driven energy production, because there's not a free market purchase of a nuclear power plant anywhere in the world. They only move forward if they're subsidized. And I think there's a lot of people out there, a lot of policymakers that are saying, why on earth would we build these power plants if Wall Street won't finance them? And a number of local governments, including the city of Fort Lauderdale just last week, passed resolutions asking the legislature to repeal that early cost recovery. So let's let these energy sources compete, because if you can get energy efficiency at 2, 3, or 4 cents a kilowatt hour, no one, even if you're a big advocate of nuclear power, it would want to spend, you know, 15 to 25 cents a kilowatt hour. They're very, very, very expensive, and no country in the world has figured out what to do with the waste. So there are many more sustainable ways that we could meet our energy need, and we're not doing that because utilities in Florida are incentivized to build power plants. That's how they make their money. They get a guaranteed rate of return when they put concrete in the ground, and they are disincentivized to help people use less energy.
Susan, I would disagree in that our Public Service Commission in Florida has gone to great lengths to improve, to ensure that our utilities try to become energy efficient and build that into their portfolios of services that they provide. And it's important that we note that, you know, there's costs associated with everything. We as a society, and I don't want to compare apples and oranges, but we are talking about energy in general. We've made a great push towards some of these biofuels, and we've seen tremendous amounts of dollars sunk in from public funds where the facilities are not working out at all. The Atlanta Journal-Constitution just the other day reported that an ethanol facility just a few miles from here up in Camilla, Georgia, it received more than $65 million in federal and state tax dollars and was sold for pennies on dollars to another biofuel maker that I believe is a foreign-owned company. So it doesn't necessarily equate to the simplicity that I think Susan laid out there. We've got to try many of these things, but when you get into mandates and you look at a mandate for something like biofuels, where our federal government has required that we use cellulosic ethanol here in the United States and in Florida, and it's just not there. And what's happening also is there, and this is one of those efforts that we tried very hard on, there's fines and penalties on there. And we as consumers know that we're ultimately going to bear the burden of those hidden costs that is, or hidden tax when you require something that isn't technically capable, even though they may have thought it was going to be just a few years ago, that requirement's in place. So it's a very difficult scenario. And again, I'd get back that in the state of American energy where we are, we know a couple of things. We're going to be heavily dependent on oil and gas is a large part of that. We've got these other fuels that are a critical part of the mix, and it's not a silver bullet. It's going to take that complete energy mix, including alternatives and conservation.
You're listening to It's About Florida. I'm Tramell Gomes. We're looking at ways the state can meet current and future energy needs. James Call is talking with Susan Glickman with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy and David Mica with the Florida Petroleum Council.
Are forces gathering against your agenda? There's the Congress has let the subsidy for ethanol to expire. There's a bill in the Florida legislature to remove the ethanol mandate.
Well, of course, the American Petroleum Council wants to sell more oil. I mean, let's just be real here. What's happening in Florida is last year, the Florida Energy Office was transferred from the Office of the Governor to the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. And Agriculture Commissioner Adam Putnam has already held a big energy summit. He is showing leadership and trying to sort of get something that all the stakeholders can get behind, which includes the oil industry and the investor-owned utilities in the state of Florida and others, to start to move forward, to bring these energy dollars here at home so that we can grow homegrown energy like sweet sorghum. There are $1 billion worth of projects in the pipeline that are going to keep energy dollars right here in Florida and put Florida farmers to work. And we don't need to sort of shift that policy. That does help to create, you know, incentives for things like blender pumps. I mean, some of this is about infrastructure. The oil and gas industry has had an infrastructure for a very long time. So you do need to help new markets open up, but also other kinds of renewable energy.
Has the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy communicated with Commissioner Putnam's office?
Yes, we talk not only to Commissioner Putnam's office, but to the governor's office. I mean, we advocate policies like to have integrated resource planning. We want to put supply side and demand side on a level playing field so people can access consumer choices, so people can put solar panels on the roof of their houses and have solar hot water heaters. We can do this. You know, 100 years ago, the challenge was universal service, and we gave out, you know, franchises and areas. There were different challenges. Now, energy, the cost of energy is really coming down in terms of renewable energy, but the cost for fossil fuels are going up. It's getting harder to even find that oil. It's one of the reasons why we had an enormous oil spill in 2010 in the Gulf of Mexico, because they're having to go deeper to find oil. There's less oil, but renewable energy is really at our fingertips.
With the Farm to Fuel initiative, you're saying that there's millions of dollars and thousands of jobs to be created by developing a biofuel supply industry here in Florida?
That's right. And the previous agriculture commissioner, Charles Bronson, started a program called Farm to Fuel that you referenced. Now that Commissioner Adam Putnam, the current commissioner, he actually has the Florida Energy Office in his purview. So he held an energy summit. So he's embracing the whole biofuels and the Farm to Fuel program, as well as expanding it and moving beyond that. So they would like to bring solar manufacturing here to the state. And you can put people to work immediately, literally within months, if we would truly embrace energy conservation and demand side management.
You'd like a rebuttal?
Yeah, I would like a rebuttal. I think it's very critical to start from the beginning. Susan, let me make perfectly clear, as a spokesman for the American oil and natural gas industry, the petroleum industry does not come here saying that we need more oil and gas. Alternative fuels and conservation efficiency are an important part of that. And I don't know how many times I need to say that. But let me also make perfectly clear that I'm very proud of the industry and what we do for the United States. We pay the federal government approximately $86 million a day, about $31 billion a year in rents, royalties, bonuses, and corporate taxes. Our industry supports about 7.7% of American GDP. That's a huge amount. And when you think about that also, we believe that we can produce about $800 billion in federal revenues in the next 20 years with our efforts to get you clean burning natural gas and more supplies of North American crude oil made into products blended with future biofuels that are out there.
First, I want to ask you, going back to Farm to Fuel.
Yes.
In the early 80s, you worked with the Florida Farm Bureau.
That's right.
Did you ever expect the emergence of a biofuel industry?
Well, just prior to working with Farm Bureau, I worked with U.S. Senator Lawton Chiles. And when we tried something called an effort toward biofuels called gasohol. And we learned some important lessons from that back in that era. Gasohol and ethanol are exactly the same thing. We learned back then that the chemistry associated with that had a large effect on our engines and our performance and our plastics and things. Great improvements have been made since then. Yes, indeed, we projected that we would be moving, and I believe personally that we would be moving toward advances in those areas. But we just produced mandates on our industry to use some of these fuels very recently, and we aren't seeing the commercial availability of some of these types of products. So we don't want to have pipe dream type estimates of what could be out there. We need to move in a market-driven manner with biofuels and with alternative fuels so that the industry can have access to them, so that consumers can afford them, and so that they're reliable for consumers to have in place. We're not looking for, as an industry, incentives for blender pumps. We have invested tens of millions, if not hundreds of millions, just coming into compliance out of our own resources here in Florida to make the mandate associated with blending ethanol into our fuels successful. And not only were we successful, we exceeded expectations when that was put in place by government. So we were able to meet that mandate so that now every gallon of fuel that's sold in Florida virtually across the board contains 10% ethanol. And let's be perfectly clear. That has not been without resistance. As you know, Representative Gates and Senator Evers are pushing a bill forward to repeal that mandate. We're aggressively neutral because we need to watch how that goes. We want to see what's going to be required of us in the future. And if they create an unnecessary expectation that we are going to just abandon that infrastructure of fuel supplies, they may be in for a surprise as well. So it's a difficult scenario when you address alternative fuels in Florida.
Susan Glickman, that is one side of the argument that will be before the legislature this session. What's the other side?
Yeah. The advanced biofuel industry is emerging in the state of Florida, and it will create thousands of new jobs. It will produce clean burning fuel, and it will also provide more energy security for us. So a bill to repeal the mandate that creates or what they call a standard is a really bad idea, because what that allows is it removes that uncertainty that allows people to come in and invest in these big projects. So energy doesn't happen – shifts in energy doesn't happen overnight. So you're talking about building big facilities. There is $1 billion – that's billion with a B – of projects on advanced biofuels in the state of Florida. We've done an enormous amount of research at our universities. Lonnie Ingram at the University of Florida has any number of patents on the ability to break down biofuels and woody biomass. So it's very exciting what these opportunities are. And so when you have a new emerging market, those are the folks that need the incentives or tax credits or whatever they may be to put those industries in place to create jobs right here in Florida. And we have that opportunity. And with the leadership of Commissioner Adam Putnam, I think we're going to see great strides over the next 4 years, 5 years, 8 years. Again, it doesn't happen overnight, but we can put Florida farmers to work right now. And I think people would much rather do that.
I want a quick comment about that. The National Academy of Sciences, the National Academy of Engineering, the Institute of Medicine, and the National Research Council in late October said that the mandates associated with biofuels across the United States are unlikely to be met under existing law that is required right now. We're seeing the effects of those associated with cellulosic ethanol. We are all about advanced biofuels. We're spending more collectively in my industry than all governments across the globe combined, the oil and gas industry is, in working toward them. They're laudable goals. We hope that they can be met. We are the largest investor associated with biofuels here in the state of Florida in the oil and gas industry with advanced biofuel technology that's going forward. But the scientists are saying we're not going to be able to meet the goals and the requirements, the mandates that are already in place. We've got to keep striving to make the innovation, the improvements in technologies that Susan wants, but we can't force them down our throats when they're not there. Therefore, we've got to look back at those traditional sources to make sure they're available as well in a cost-effective way that is reliable. And we believe we can produce the jobs, the energy, and the revenues to the state to do just that as well.
Boy, thank you both for your time.
Great. Thank you, James, for having us.
Thanks, James.
Thank you to our guests, Susan Glickman with the Southern Alliance for Clean Energy, David Micah with the Florida Petroleum Council, and Chief Legislative News Producer James Call. You've been listening to It's About Florida, a production of WFSU-FM. Our senior producer is Regan McCarthy, with technical assistance provided by Taylor Cox. Please join us again next week for more discussions about the issues impacting our state. I'm Tramell Gomes.